World Environment Day, declared by the UN, is celebrated on the 5th of June. Last year, the theme was conservation, and this year it highlights ecological restoration. So, in this podcast, I'll chit-chat some about the ecological restoration and, of course, the wild weedy greens. I have not forgotten about the piperacy story that I had started last week. If not in this podcast, I'll definitely cover it in the next. I have so much of spicy peppered story about piperacy that I can't wait to tell you. But for today, let's talk about the theme chosen by the World Environment Day. You are listening to the 44th episode of the Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina welcoming you. So, the World Environment Day this year is focuses on ecological restoration. This is from the understanding that without reviving ecosystem, we cannot achieve sustainable development goals or Paris Climate Agreement, to which India and most nations are signatories to. But then, what is restoration? And how does wild, weedy, uncultivated greens be weaved into this story? Listen on. Restoration is now often referred to as rewilding. I like the term, but what does it really mean? Like most new terms, it means pretty much whatever the user thinks about. There is no real consensus about it. So why not take a pause and think, what does the word rewilding means to you? Well, I read a paper that tries to box the different thoughts in several categories, and it came up with three schools of thoughts. These schools of thoughts are not exclusive. That is, you could believe in all of them or pick and choose. So the first school of thought believes it is restoring wilderness. This includes typically, the usual setting up of a core protected area, designing and setting up of corridors, and reinstating carnivore in the ecosystem. The approach could be precise, where it is targeting restoration of a particular species or a population or an ecological function. It also includes basically a passive management of ecological succession. So you protect an area and let the succession do its job. In one of my previous podcasts, I had spoken about a wild weedy plants that I see only in lands which has been previously disturbed. So it is clearly a pioneer species. You yourself can do this exercise. Choose a particular patch on your yard or in your walking path, wherever you can notice it every day, and try to note the wild weedy plants that is growing there that you have not planted. You need not know its name or whether it's edible or not. Just notice, are they growing in shade or full sun? Are they appearing only after the rains or during the summer also? Things like that. And you will see that it would change, from year to year or even season to season. It happened to me once, of course it happens to me even now, but one of the first distinct time I had noticed it is that one year I had a yard full of wild ground cherries. This is called Physalis minima. And Physalis minima comes, if you notice the Audible Weed Walk logo, it is also in that logo. The little, parachutes are actually colored fruits of the ground cherries. So I had a real good time. I made fruity sauce and jams, and I thought next year I'll do it again. But next year it didn't come back. There were a few plants, yes, but it was taken over by something else. Lucky for me that it was also edible, but I started, definitely noticing, even in a small space like a yard, the succession is very distinct. So the second school of thought considers rewilding as restoration of traditional agriculture. This could be based on past records of tradition, like reintroduction of a certain crop or cropping practice, or reintroduction of certain properties of the wild crop through biotechnology-based interventions, etc. And also restoring of transhumance, you know, where people move with their livestock to different grazing grounds according to the season. Like, you know, they graze in the higher altitudes during the summer and come down to the lower altitudes during the winter. Also, the second school includes growing and encouraging growth of wild, weedy, uncultivated plants along with agriculture. To me, that sounds more like permaculture. I visited several permaculture organic farms in this area, where I found amazing growth of wild, weedy plants along with the agricultural crop. But only a few or none are actually used by the farmers themselves or treated as a produce. Though I have found that the farmers are immensely interested to learn about wild plants and to be aware of and to reconnect. This brings us right to the third school of rewilding. The third school considers rewilding to be restoring severed human nature relationship involving reconnecting people with nature. That is exactly what I'm trying to do with the edible weed walk project. I remember that when I started, I was asked by someone, like, are you sure? Have you really tried out all the plants that are in your book? And the same person now tells that she finds her day kind of incomplete if she doesn't forage something and, at least make a cup of tea or something out of a foraged plant. I had also heard, kind of mock complaint from somebody telling that it now takes me longer to cycle the same distance I used to always cycle because of your book. So because now I started noticing all the wild plants growing along the cycle path that I never noticed before. So this knowledge about the wild weedy plants comes handy anytime. In my community, it came handy definitely during the pandemic as more and more people started eating the wild uncultivated greens. Looking back at our history, we find the same. I'll give you an example. This was during the 1943 huge Bengal famine. It affected Bengal, which includes the present-day West Bengal and Bangladesh, and also Odisha. The record shows that about 2 to 3 million people in Bengal alone had died, and a total number of about 5 million. So, you know, the number is very similar to the number of people killed by the Nazi regime itself. But then how many of us actually talks about this particular, massacre, really? A significant paper came out in 2019 in the Journal of Geophysical Research Letters. It was published by Vimal Mishra from IIT and six other researchers from India and abroad who looked at the record and concluded that was long claimed by economists and social scientists that Bengal famine in 1943 did not actually was caused by drought or agricultural failure, but due to apathetic bad distribution policy by the British rulers in India. This is Shashi Tharoor in his book writes, Churchill deliberately ordered the diversion of food from starving Indian civilians to well-supplied British soldiers and even to top up European stockpiles meant for yet-to-be-liberated Greeks and Yugoslavs. In this time, the people who survived this famine, which actually started in 1941, ended sometime in 1946, a year before partition, and again partition killed even more people. But this particular phase, people survived by totally depending on wild plants, wild food, not just plants. So because they didn't have, you know, when there is no money for food, there is definitely no money for seed and sowing. So their agriculture completely, you know, crashed. So the only food people, whoever survived, was through the wild, uncultivated, weedy plants. So if you want to actually, there is a wonderful movie by Satyajit Ray called Oshuni Shanket in Bengali. It's called Distant Thunder, that actually focuses on this phase, if you want to catch that. So throughout the developing world, including India, wild uncultivated food provide a green social and cultural security to millions of people. These weedy plants add diversity to local food system, reinforce local culture, and contribute towards diversity of the farming system. And at a household level, it provides food and nutrition security, social security, income generation, and basic medical care. It seems 60 to 70% of people in the developing world depends on uncultivated plants, of which food is the primary reason of use. Papers from India, Bangladesh, Nepal, Bhutan show similar patterns despite differences among them. It shows that rural people consume uncultivated food for about 50 to 80 days a year, which is nearly a quarter of the year that people are eating uncultivated wild weedy plants. That's huge. Because of all the reason discussed, and as a means to abate negative impacts of climate change, ecological conservation and restoration, that includes promotion of uncultivated plants to allow people to adapt and build resilience, is therefore essential. With that thought, I will see you next time.